I certainly didn't expect, you know, 10:30 on a Sunday morning, standing in the middle of a Little League field, that I was going to have to make these choices, decisions. But in terms of like what you do, like you just react. You hope you know what to do when you're not thinking about what to do.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Charlie Shelton Ormond.
I'm Chris Breslin. I live in Durham, North Carolina. I'm a pastor and a Little League volunteer coach. I love baseball and played it growing up and am thrilled that one of my kids likes it. We play Bull City Little League with a lot of the kids from Titus's school. We've only done a couple seasons. This past year was our second season, and really just full bore into baseball mode. It is one of those experiences as a parent where you get to be on the other side of a previous experience, and you start to kind of come full circle and realize some of the things that you only saw as a kid, you know. We kind of nickname my son Titus. He's going to be 9 in a couple weeks. The athletic director, because he like loves anything with a ball, like roll a ball out and he's all in, and it's life or death. And he's played a bunch of different sports, but he's really kind of honed in on baseball. And so getting to play with other kids that are equally obsessed is really fun for him.
In the morning on Sunday, July 10th, Chris Breslin loaded up the family car alongside his wife and 4 kids. They headed about an hour east to Wilson, North Carolina, where his son Titus was set to play in a Little League baseball game.
We had just finished our regular season, and they pick all-stars throughout the league. And we had competed in Wilson in a district tournament for our district. Actually didn't do that great. We came in 3rd and thought our abbreviated summer season was over, and that probably was okay for everyone. But then we got this miraculous berth to play in the state tournament back in Wilson. This group of kids and families, really fun to get to, you know, practice every day in the summer and sweat like crazy and get to know these folks really well and get to travel down the road. Wilson, North Carolina is, you know, the home of the NC Baseball Hall of Fame and the Wilson Tobbs and this beautiful Little League field, like a stadium with a jumbotron with the kids' faces on it. Like, dreamy experience for these kids. That's where we're headed back the second weekend of July. We'd gotten to the complex early that morning. We were the first slate of games for the day, and we actually thought we were going to play in the stadium, which everyone was really looking forward to, and it had poured torrentially the night before in Wilson in part of those summer showers, and so when we got there, the stadium was just completely underwater, and we got moved to Field 2, which is not normally used for our level. We were playing East Chatham. To be honest, they were beating us pretty bad. And we were a few innings in and trying to come back, trying to wake up a little bit, I guess, and just getting ready to start our part of the 4th inning. And I was adjusting the pitching machine to the opposing team's catcher. They were coming onto the field, and all of a sudden we heard kind of 3 zooming sounds. Not even really like claps or pops or bangs. And they felt really close. I almost felt them more than I even heard them or before I heard them. I was one of the maybe 2 or 3 adults on the field. Everyone was kind of in dugouts and on the side because I was pitching machine. There was an umpire. And kind of the realization of what was happening simultaneously almost for everyone. You kind of flinch and then everyone hit the deck. And, you know, the dugouts are just chain link fence. It's a pretty open complex and no one is barricaded, and you don't know what is going on. You don't know if you're going to turn around and there's going to be someone coming at you with a gun. I looked over on the ground and there was a little kid from the other team, and he was really terrified. You could see it in his eyes, and he kept saying, "Help me, help me." I crawled over and laid on top of him. Everyone was reacting, and, you know, I think, thinking back, you know, probably my reasoning was, like, I don't know what is happening, I don't know what is and isn't safe, but, like, I can't watch this kid get hurt. I would rather get hurt. And we're in the middle of an open field. The complex is in the middle of cornfields and tobacco fields. It's very exposed. So everyone is trying to make these calculations of, where do I run to that is safe? Where is this coming from? And the bullets actually came across our field, kind of from the outfield and left field through the field of play. Two of them broke out a window of a Honda minivan of one of our parents that was parked by the first base dugout. And then one bullet actually landed in right center field, which is where my son Titus was playing 5-6 minutes before. Our team was in the dugout, so at least kind of concentrated. The kids on the other team were all scattered in the field, and so the East Chatham coaches were army crawling, trying to pull kids in. That is a big test to realize, like, what happens? What are you thinking about? What are you relying on? Yeah, I mean, I found myself huddled with this little guy that is saying, "I'm scared. Are we gonna die? Are the bad men coming? I never want to play baseball again." And, like, I find myself, you know, praying with him, and then later huddling with some of the moms and grandmas, praying with them. So you realize that the things that kind of rise to the top of your conscience and what tools that you actually have.
There are videos of this moment Chris is describing available to view online. The moment when Chris is on the mound and the kids are in their positions on the field, getting ready to continue playing, when they start to hear the zoom of the bullets. A lot of times in putting together an episode like this, it's a priority to include real audio from whatever people are describing. It's an attempt to bring listeners into the lived experience of the folks sharing their story. But this attempt, obviously, can never achieve what it's actually like to be there. And in this case, those sounds of bullets evoke an experience that is painful and traumatic. And recognizing that, in my opinion, is more important than attempting anything.
I think we were able to get off the field, you know, within 10 minutes, and I was able to find my wife and three of my kids and family friends behind home plate, probably all within a span of 20 minutes or whatever, which was eternal. I think I texted my mom at like 11:01, and that was enough time, about a half an hour, to realize, like, no one at the complex had gotten physically hurt. We think this is over. The police are saying it's probably over. If you hear something about this, we're okay, at least right now. It was kind of unclear, like, what is next, what everyone should be doing. The police responded really quickly. There were a lot of police there right away. They had dogs in the fields and seemingly, like, secured the place, and we're taking questions from people, including our mom with the busted out minivan, and trying to find the bullet that had busted it out. We were pretty surprised when we got back to Durham, and later that evening we started to get, like, the local news reports that all relied on the Wilson police press release. We were really surprised to hear some of the ways that was being communicated. Since they've amended this press release, but there was some note about a car on a tree line that had gotten hit, which, like, it was a minivan parked next to the dugout. They made a really quick determination that it was not an active shooter situation, very tightly defined, in that it was a shots fired within city limits type of incident is what the initial release said. They also did not report that bullets had actually flown through a field of play and that one landed in the outfield. It was all shots were heard near the complex. That kind of constellation of either incorrect or smoothed details really felt pretty re-traumatizing for everyone that had just been there. I think it was pretty disconcerting how quickly they came to a determination that things were quote-unquote safe there now, especially considering they didn't, and still now 3+ weeks later, know who was shooting and why and from where. They've since investigated and found that the bullets are likely like Russian-style short rounds that typically come from like an AK-47. And they're saying that the shots came from shooting at a railroad crossing sign a half a mile away. And even that most updated press release said that the fields weren't visible from where that was. So basically implying it was pure accident, someone out kind of joy shooting on a Sunday morning who needed to aim lower or have a backstop or something, which is not at all comforting. but I'm not tied up in a sort of like rural gun culture that is comfortable with that sort of accident.
A sergeant with the Wilson Police Department confirmed the investigation is still ongoing to identify the person who fired these shots, and that no additional information is available right now.
And trying to, as a parent and someone who experiences trauma, trying to advocate for what happened and trying to kind of use that event as a wake-up call to a community, but then finding like how steeped in kind of gun culture that community is pretty disconcerting and kind of feels like bumping your head up against a wall kind of over and over to feel like you're trying to shout to raise the level of alarm on something that like really could have hurt a lot of people. To be honest, I've never been a gun person, but like in the last 3 weeks, I've deep dove into trying to figure some of this stuff out. And this happens at a time when there's a ban on assault weapons trying to go through our Congress. And so it is interesting when you start to talk or raise concerns that I've gotten several times, oh, you're from Durham. Durham it has way more violent crime than we do. Worry about yourself. And to which I responded, like, I think Durham has a gun problem too. We're not immune to that. Like, I live in a neighborhood that I have woken up in the last 3 weeks because I hear gunshots, and those wake me up now. I used to be able to sleep through them. Again, I don't think that this is unique to Wilson, but in some ways this could have happened anywhere, but it happened in Wilson. I think there was a recognition with the parents of like, nothing is resolved in Wilson. But we know our season's over, and we know we don't want it to end that way for the kids. We don't want these kids, if they never play baseball again. That was the last taste. It really came together from the Goodmans, Michael and Liz Goodman. Michael's the coach of South Durham Little League and owner of the Durham Bulls. To call in these favors and assemble this event that we would bring the three local teams, South Durham, Bull City, East Chatham, and have a night at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park.
Nice.
So that happened on Tuesday after the Sunday morning. Each player got announced on the field. Woolly Bull was there. Siblings were allowed to come. They got to hang out in the dugout. And then each kid got to hit on the field from the pitching machine. And play wiffle ball in left field, play kickball in center field, and then we had hot dogs and food. They got to watch Rookie of the Year on the Jumbotron. They had mental health counselors kind of discreetly located there in those sorts of resources too. So kind of thought from every angle how to make it fun, how to make it beautiful. And it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. I had a mentor in grad school, and one of the things he says, and I think of it, is you can't always make it happy, but you can try to make it beautiful. And that's what that Tuesday night with the Durham Bulls felt like. None of us were all that happy. A lot of us still aren't and can't be, but it was really beautiful and a real sign of community. As a pastor, as a Christian, you know, I'm fortunately or unfortunately committed to thoughts and prayers. Like, I don't have the luxury of eliding the prayer part of that, right? And so my prayers have been often pretty angry prayers, but it is becoming kind of by the day more and more clear how prayer and action need to be linked. For me personally, for communities of faith and these sorts of things. You know, calling on God to not just change things, but specifically change hearts. Like that was what I was seeing a lot in communicating with newspapers and police and people on Facebook chats, is like, you're not going to change things if people's hearts are not changed or if their imaginations aren't changed. And I think God does that, not forcefully, but over time and sneakily and through relationships and through people staying at the table, even when you're frustrated, even when you just want to shout, but to try to engage people as humans and across difference. Despite all the evidence to the contrary, things can be better. We can be better.
This episode of Tested was produced by me, Charlie Shelton-Ortman. The editor was Dave DeWitt. Thank you for listening.